Welcome into another edition of the Woj Pod here with Malcolm Brogdon of the Indiana Pacers and my second consecutive Players Association Executive Committee member. Had your new president, CJ McCollum, last week, and Malcolm has been a VP on the Executive Committee for a few years now. Malcolm, how are you?
I'm doing good. Thank you for having me.
Of course. I want to start here, Malcolm, and we're taping this on Tuesday, so if people listen to this before Thursday night, the 26th, you've got your water bowl fantasy football draft, essentially, which is, it helps to raise money for your Hoops for Humanity initiative, which is delivering kind of clean water infrastructure in Eastern Africa, a lot of other things in that part of the world. And it's a pretty interesting event. If you're going to play fantasy football, you essentially can line up with you, Joe Harris, Miles Turner, Kevin Herter, some NBA players, some WNBA players. Tell me how that works, Malcolm, and where you go to sign up for that before. So it's Thursday night, 7 p.m. Eastern is the draft.
Right. So the draft is Thursday night, like you said, and tomorrow is the last day that you can sign up. You would go to, if you wanted to be a part of it and sign up, you'd go to BrogdonFamilyFoundation.org, which is our website. There's plenty of information about that. There's plenty of information about, you know, the money that we get from the Water Bowl Fantasy Football League, where that money will go. There's plenty of information about that. The clean water wells that we're putting in to the ground in East Africa, in Tanzania and Kenya. You can learn everything you want to learn about the whole cause if you go to the website and look up any information you want to know.
No, that's great. And we're going to talk more about that. It is an incredible initiative, and what you've done as a part of it, going back as a young man, growing up, going to Eastern Africa as a grade school kid a couple times with your family, and seeing for yourself the poverty, the need for infrastructure there, and the role you've played. But I want to start, Malcolm, with this offseason for the Pacers. And Rick Carlisle comes in as the new head coach. There is a lot to clean up. There's just a lot to clean up from last year, I think, in that organization, in that locker room in Indiana. And Rick Carlisle kind of commands, listen, this is a championship coach, certainly the most accomplished coach in the league on the market this year. A lot of young coaches getting their first crack at it, but really the only championship coach who is out there. And, of course, a UVA grad like yourself. Walk me through, Malcolm, the conversations you've had with Rick Carlisle, and I think you two kind of, as really the two leaders of this team in this locker room, how has that gone? What have you two done together to kind of start preparing to make the changes that are going to have to come for this team?
So, I thought we got the best possible coach for us going into next season. I thought our front office did a good job in this selection of Carlisle. He's a winner at the highest level, championship status. And he knows what he's doing. He knows, what style of play he wants to play. And he knows how to get guys to play together. And he's going to provide us with stability and experience and a leadership I think we need right now. So I think we got the right guy for the job. Me and Carlisle have had a lot of conversations. We're talking basically once a week. And at this point, it's about just thinking through strategies. He picks my brain about a lot of aspects of the team, trying to figure out how he's going to coach the team and what guys respond in different ways. So for me as the leader on the team, it's important to be able to communicate with him, for us to have open, honest dialogue going into it, and to prepare together. This is a group effort. That's what I've learned in the league. You got to be able to work with your coaches like you work with your teammates. But the team, we got together in LA and played pickup. Most of the guys, there were only maybe two or three guys that didn't come out. You know, in the past, we haven't done that. I thought it was important for guys to play pickup, to get together, to have dinner for those 3-4 days in LA. So we had a facility. It worked out really well. And I think it's going to be something that pays off at the end of the day, at the end of the season. We'll be able to look back and say, we started early. We started before everybody else did. And I think those are the little things that will really help us down the line. And then, Carlisle, myself, and there, you know, the older guys on the team, we've agreed that we're going to come back 2 weeks early. It's important that we're there on the 13th to start pickup, start playing early, and get a head start. We're not a team. We're not the Lakers. We don't have a bunch of, honestly, champions that can come in during, training camp day and, start playing and everything work out. We gotta, bust our ass a little bit to get back on track. So that's what we plan on doing.
Malcolm, last year when there's the strife that was there in Indiana last year and trying to figure out with a coach and a locker room and a team, in a pandemic year where all of a sudden you were limited in how you could gather as a team, like sometimes every team has issues. Every team has issues. And it's how you work through them. Was that harder to do last year because of the pandemic? Because you couldn't go out maybe as a group to dinner. You couldn't sit in a film room and like you traditionally could and talk things out. Did that make it harder?
For sure. I think it definitely played a part. And I think it, the pandemic and COVID overall, I think exacerbated the drama that we had. I think it was just a tough time period. Everybody's going through something. Everybody has family members that are getting sick. It just adds more stress to the situation. And there were more restrictions on the gatherings that the team could have and the amount of time that the team could spend together. So it was a tough time to be going through sort of the trials that the team was going through.
Caris LeVert comes in as part of that big four-way deal with Brooklyn, Houston. And obviously, luckily he gets his physical. They find a tumor essentially that they take out. He's able to come back and play, but you didn't have him for a very long time. And it's hard, certainly, coming off that and trying to integrate him into the team. You got into the play-in and you're out there. Did you get a sense of really what this team could be like with him, with Sabonis, with Miles, kind of your core guys? Were you ever able to get a sense of last year of what this team might be able to look like?
Honestly, I wasn't. I haven't, over the past 2 years, I haven't gotten a sense of what the team can look like, because when Victor was here, he was out. He was out for a majority. He was out for all last season and came back, or all the my first season in Indiana, and then came back last season just for a little bit before, he was traded. And then Caris came, towards the end of the season. So Miles was injured when Caris came back. I mean, we've had injuries to the big minute guys on this team. And it's just happened at opportune times. So I haven't gotten a feel of what this team can become or be.
Malcolm, when you talk to Rick Carlisle about what this team needs and what it should look like, what were the one or two things, or have been the one or two things that you felt were really important to get through to him about as a leader on that team, as one of the elite players there? We need what? We need this from you.
Structure. I think that's one of the ways, just watching Rick Carlisle, watching film on his teams, especially the Dallas teams, and even when he was here in Indiana, his teams thrive because he provided enough structure. Teams that have too much structure become robots. Teams that have no structure play too loose and are too reckless and too up and down. Teams that have the right amount of structure have, sort of the foundation that they need, sort of the motion offense that they can always rely on and fall back on, but they also have the confidence and freedom to play their game. And I think that's what the balance of Rick Carlisle would bring to us.
NBA fans, listen up. You've got to try Pick 6, the newest fantasy app from DraftKings, an official partner of the NBA. Getting started is simple. Select if a player will have more or less of a stat. For example, will a player have more than one rebound, or will a player have less than 3.5 assists? Pick your favorite players and compete for huge cash prizes. Download the new DraftKings Pick 6 app now using code Parlay and take on the competition with your best NBA player picks. Only on DraftKings Pick 6 with code Parlay. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 18 plus in most eligible states. Age varies by jurisdiction. Eligibility restrictions apply. Pick 6 not available in all states, including but not limited to Connecticut and New York. For up-to-date lists of states, visit dkng.co/pick6states. Void where prohibited. See terms at pick6.draftkings.com/promos.
You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish. Yes, catch the clutch hits, strikeouts, grand slams, web gems with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, root, root with nothing on your roof. Yes, stream your team. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Malcolm, having been drafted into the league in Milwaukee, you know, you were there largely at the ground floor of what became a, you know, kind of a championship journey for that group. You were there. I think your last game in Milwaukee was the elimination game in the conference finals against Toronto when Kawhi and those guys go on and win. What was it like to see the Bucks kind of finish something off that you were there for a good part of that journey with, you know, most of the several, I think certainly the key guys who were, you know, who were your teammates and guys you grew in the league with?
To be honest, it was bittersweet. There was a piece that was like, man, like, there was no regret. So let me say that. There was no regret. Like, man, I wish I would have stayed. I thought, I think everything, one, happens for a reason in life. And I also think I made the best decision for myself and my family at the time. And there are no regrets in me coming to Indiana. I've enjoyed playing here. But there's, you know, there's also a side to it that, you know, you're thinking, dang, like, I could have possibly had a ring. You know, things don't always work out if you, you know, stay in that situation, but I could have possibly had a ring. But you look at that team, you look at those guys on that team, Giannis, Chris, those guys work, man. They work hard. They've grinded. They've been through a few coaches. They've been through some tough times. So I have the utmost respect for those guys for sticking with it and grinding, because I think a guy like Giannis, he deserves it. He works incredibly hard. That's one thing I always say about Giannis. He's an incredibly hard worker. And then they have good guys on that team. They just have good people.
You know, you mentioned Giannis, and I think the people who spent every day with him, you know, obviously understand it the best. But where you see where he, in the ways he dominated in the finals and how he dominated, to see where he was as a player and how he kept working on his weaknesses and then turned them into strengths. And what I always really admire about him is you can't, like, if he throws an air ball, if he shoots an air ball, if he misses a bunch of threes, if he misses free throws, he comes back at you even harder. You can see some guys who will go into a shell and the embarrassment of it kind of makes them pull back. And Giannis is going to come down on the next trip and try to dunk it on your head. There was a relentlessness about him that I think he sort of brings every day, always has, that really paid off for him, right?
Absolutely. I think that's the perfect word for him, him being relentless. His relentless approach towards the game is what makes him great. It's not the dunks. It's not, you know, the stare downs. It's not the funny jokes in the media. It's his approach every single day. He's relentless with his work ethic, with his discipline, with how serious he takes practice. Giannis is a guy who gets in practice and we'll have we would have a 30-minute practice and have, you know, 2 5-minute segments that were live. And he wanted to dominate both of the 5-minute segments. Like, he wanted to dominate. And that's the relentlessness that I think separates him from 99% of the other NBA players in the world.
to me, it's so interesting, Malcolm, of how you came in the league into Milwaukee. And every few years, there's a guy like you who, you know, you're a rare four-year college player who becomes, you know, essentially an all-star level player, but certainly a borderline all-star level player, a 20-point scorer in the league. We don't see much of that anymore. And here you were, three times All-ACC, Player of the Year in the ACC, Defensive Player of the Year in the ACC. It wasn't, and you're doing it at Virginia, like you weren't hiding at some mid-major. And you go in the second round of the draft. When you think back to it, were you, people sort of talk about this sometimes, the longer you stay in school, maybe the more they pick apart your game or take you for granted. Or when you were coming out, or maybe thinking about after your sophomore, junior year, should I come out? What was the knock on you? What were they saying about you that you just weren't, you weren't a lottery pick, even though history shows, of course, you should have been.
Yeah. It's funny you say all that. You're talking like you're me. But the stigma on me was I'm not athletic enough. The stigma was also bigger than me. It was on Virginia had a stigma of not producing pros. So it was like, no matter how well I played, they were like, we've never seen these Virginia guys translate. We've never seen them come to the league and been good pros. So there was a stigma on me, but also a bigger stigma. And it was hard. I feel like me, Joe, Justin, we were able to break that stigma. That's why you have Ty and DeAndre and these other guys. They continue to break the stigma, but they came after us. And people then suddenly realized, like, oh, these guys are really good pros. Like, oh, no, we expect these guys to be lottery and first round picks. They come from one of the best programs in the country. They've dominated in college. Like, no, we're going to respect them as if they came from a Kentucky or a Duke. We're going to draft them high and expect them to be really good pros. So I think it was a stigma personally, but also a bigger stigma that Virginia didn't produce pros, and we've sort of broken that glass ceiling.
And Malcolm, here's why that's even dumber. Because all anybody in the NBA has tried to do for the last, I don't know, maybe 6 years, 7 years, they tried to hire your coach into the NBA. Yeah. I mean, Tony Bennett has been the one college coach. Every year, teams quietly reach out to Tony. Every year he says, no thanks, I'm happy here. And so that always fascinates me. His players don't translate to the NBA. Well, then why does everybody want to hire the coach into the NBA?
Yeah. Why are you chasing him if he doesn't translate? No. I knew he was in the run for the Milwaukee job. When Budenholzer got the job, I knew his name was out there. He was in the run. I think for Coach Bennett, I think he's happy at UVA. He's not someone, it's not in his character to be searching for, you know, a greener grass on the other side. He's happy where he is. He's really trying to build something. He's trying to build a legacy. He's trying to see his work through at UVA. And that's what I think you got to love about him.
Yeah. And I think, listen, you come into the league, you win Rookie of the Year. And then obviously, like I said, you grow with that Bucks team and that core of Giannis and Chris Middleton. When you got to the point where, you know, it's funny, when you're a second round pick, your contract comes up quicker than the first round pick who does his rookie extension. It's a different timetable, and you were on that. And it's usually rare that a second round pick becomes the kind of player you do. And then there's just like a quicker decision that's got to be made about your future and financially how it works. And when you get to the point where you've got to decide between, you know, the kind of financial opportunity that was going to be there in a sign and trade with Indiana, $85 million or so, versus what it might have been to try to stay in Milwaukee and either take less or just say, hey, you know, the message is financially you don't fit into the structure of what we're doing. And what do you remember about that crossroad? And it was just a decision you had to make as a player that guys of your caliber typically don't have to make that early. And it just, again, it's because you went in the second round instead of the first, and how the extension structure essentially is set up.
Right. Well, one, let me say there's beauty in going in the second round. If your agent's good, he can try to drop you to a team that is a better fit, or, you know, he can sort of shape which team you go to. And then your contract comes up sooner, your second contract. But You know, during that period, I remember looking back on it, I took it very personal. Because for you as a player, people say it's not personal, it's just business. This is how the business works. Yeah, but for these players, for us, we're being shipped out and moved to a different city, and we're moving our family with us. So it's completely uprooting your life. It is personal. But looking back on it, now I realize how much of it actually is just business. I was really angry, you know, about not being able to stay and get paid, because that was ideal. I felt like, man, I did my thing in Milwaukee. I played well. My third season, I was 50, 40, 90. How could they not want to pay me, you know, my value, what I think my value is? But what, you know, a lot of the time in the NBA, what you think your value is or what you think you should get and what you're going to get or what someone else has planned for you is completely different. And that was a thing with Milwaukee. I think Milwaukee really wanted me. They wanted me to stay. They were upset when they lost me. But they didn't want to pay me 85 to stay. They didn't think I was worth 85 to pay and stay. Which, looking back, maybe they were right. They went ahead and won a championship. I mean, at this point, there are no hard feelings. I do think it's business. I think it's personal when you get moved. But at the end of the day, they're making a business decision based on financial means and trying to win a championship.
Malcolm, I'm fascinated by this. Your senior thesis at the University of Virginia was what?
It was on clean water.
You partnered with a company that they essentially made like ceramic water filters in Africa, right? And
yep, in the Lesotho sort of region of South Africa.
It's remarkable. I mean, I we do have that in common. I did a senior thesis too. It was on the ESPN's impact on college basketball. That's what we were doing over in journalism school. So, you know, comparable impact on the world, Malcolm. But no, it's remarkable. And so you when you come out of Virginia, Chris Long, who is your another UVA great and obviously Super Bowl winning NFL player, he had his Water Boys initiative, which I think initially you partnered with, right? Because it fit into them. Right?
Yep.
And then it broke off. But and then now you have your own Brogdon Family Foundation. But this goes back to, for you, 10 years old with your parents. Your mom's been the chair of the psychology department at Morehouse. Your dad's an attorney. You took a family trip, I think at 10, and then maybe another as a young teenager to Eastern Africa. What happened on that trip for you?
So when I was 10, I was able to go to West Africa, Ghana. And the second trip, I was able to go to South Africa and Malawi, which is Southern East Africa. And Ghana, I saw the poverty for the first time in my life that people were going through. It was a different level of need that I had seen or experienced. And then when I went back when I was 14 to Malawi, the need and the poverty was even worse. And at that point, I you know, even as a young kid, I decided I want to make a difference here. I want to help. I may not have the means or the resources or the connections to do it right now, but at some point I'm going to come back and I'm going to help in whatever way I can. And then in college, I made it sort of, you know, you mentioned my parents and what they do for a living. Education was huge for us. So I took my grades, I took my classwork extremely serious. I got my master's, that's what my thesis was on, and really focused on clean water. And then after college, I partnered with the Chris Long Foundation to have Hoops2O. And then I brought Hoops2O over to my foundation and I've just continued the work trying to help people.
And I mean, we're going to see this and like as climate change evolves in this world and we see migration become a bigger factor in this global crisis, I only imagine the need for what you're doing, Malcolm, and for what other people need to do, clean water, the ability for people to be able to feed people in the world, to be able to, you know, create clean water, you know, wells, to build wells where communities, where people, you know, where young people can go and be able to get clean water and not have to spend their entire day or their entire existence searching for it. and then not be able to go to school, not be able to get an education.
Right.
I imagine that what you're doing and the need has only become, it's become more dire.
Absolutely. And you know, when you know, my foundation is a huge focus on equity, gender equity. And when you mentioned, you know, kids being, having to search for water, a lot of the time it's the kids in the family and it's the girls. That's why the girls' education is so heavily impacted. That's why they're at such a disadvantage to get their education and to really excel in life, to get job opportunities after school, is because their schooling is at a huge disadvantage. They're not able to go to class because they're searching for water, because they're out all day long having to do the grunt of the housework, including going and finding clean water for the family. So it's becoming a bigger problem as climate change, as you know, droughts, especially in different parts of Africa. There have always been droughts, but then droughts are getting longer and longer. So it's definitely becoming more of a dire need for, you know, people, especially in those rural communities in Africa, different parts of Africa, to you know, have clean water.
Malcolm, when you talk right now within the Players Association and being a part of that executive committee, and obviously there's a transition here. Chris Paul's had two tenures, essentially two four-year runs as president, and he stepped, you know, he did not run for re-election. CJ's a new president. When you're talking now with among your group and then you guys talk with the league, how much still to you is there, how much uncertainty is there still on next season? What it's going to look like for teams with vaccinations, with certainly even with most players in the league are vaccinated. Most team officials are vaccinated, coaches, but we're seeing vaccinated people test positive. We're seeing them get ill, but obviously if you are vaccinated, you are, you know, in almost every case, you are preventing yourself from becoming gravely ill. And that's the important part, but how the league manages this going forward, how you guys manage this with the league, what is that conversation like right now? And how much still seems to be up in the air with what it looks like in the NBA?
They're ongoing conversations. I mean, these are conversations in the past that would, before COVID, would end. Once the season started, everything was set in stone. We had a CBA, you know, it was sort of a written contract that everybody would abide by. Now it's a fluid conversation. Things are changing rapidly as the virus rates drop and increase. You know, we have to make adjustments, you know, where we see them fit. So, you know, it's important. And, you know, we still have guys on, you know, they're saying about two guys per team are not getting vaccinated. And that's been a big topic of discussion because there have been some that are like, no, everybody needs to be vaccinated. This isn't a question. This is killing people. And then, you know, I think most players, even guys like myself that are vaccinated, are like, no, it's a choice. It's a choice. You can be vaccinated. You can get vaccinated or you cannot. But if you're not going to be vaccinated, this is what we have agreed on. If you're not going to get vaccinated, your testing on the daily is far more, you know, throughout the season is going to be far more. It's going to be more of a hassle for you. If you're not going to be vaccinated, you have to get tested more often. But like you said, the tricky part is, even the vaccinated people are getting sick. So that throws a little bit of a wrench and an unknown into everything because no one is safe. But I think testing is really the key. That's the way we can catch it early and the way we can avoid as many disruptions this season as possible.
Absolutely. And so, Malcolm, so you guys will get together, the Pacers will get together early for camp. You guys' plan is to get everybody back sooner. And you look at the Eastern Conference, listen, the Pacers have been a perennial playoff team with Sabonis, Miles, you, now Karis back at 100% this year. And with Rick, who I think history has shown, I think there was some, I remember Mark Cuban talking about this once, that, you know, one of the reasons he hired Rick initially was his teams always get it. There's always a big bounce in year one. There's always a big improvement in year one with Rick Carlisle teams. And I think people would expect that with your group. You look around the Eastern Conference and you go, where do the Pacers fit in the East? When you look at your talent, having Rick in, is this a team people kind of just keep forgetting about, but it's a pretty damn good starting five you guys have.
It is. It's a very solid starting five. We have a lot of, we have five young vets. That's how I would describe it. Guys that have been in the league for anywhere from 6 to 8 years on the, in that starting lineup. And, you know, guys that can play, guys that are proven, guys that are in their second contract. So agendas and stats and all that really should be put aside. It should be about winning. And I think that's going to be the focus this season, is just getting back to playing the right way, getting back to playing together, and trying to win games. I think that's the key.
Malcolm Brogdon, thank you for jumping in. The Water Bowl Fantasy Football League, you can sign up through Wednesday the 25th. You can go to the Brogdon Family Foundation website. You can go to your Twitter account at Malcolm Brogdon 7, and there's a Brogdon Foundation Twitter account, so you can click on the link there and see how you can get in there. But Malcolm, good luck with that. Enjoy the rest of what is left for the summer, and I know we'll catch you this season.
Yes, sir. Well, thank you for having me.
Today's interview with Malcolm Brogdon has been fueled by Gatorade. Whatever path you take to greatness, Gatorade is there to fuel it. Greatness starts with G. 30 for 30 podcasts and the Undefeated present The King of Crenshaw. This four-part series examines how Nipsey Hussle's life, death, and legacy impact the sports world, particularly the NBA. Here, DeMar DeRozan, Isaiah Thomas, and DeMarcus Cousins, among others, explore the realities of life as a black man in America. Nipsey's dedication to South LA and his community, and how Nipsey inspired millions. The marathon continues. The King of Crenshaw, listen now on SiriusXM, Pandora, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening to this episode of the Woj Pod. A big thank you to my guest today, Indiana Pacers guard Malcolm Brogdon. Be sure to listen to new and archived episodes of the Woj Pod wherever you get your podcasts. Be sure to also listen to The Low Post with Zach Lowe, The Hoop Collective with Brian Windhorst, and it's football season, the Adam Schefter podcast with Adam Schefter. We'll catch you next time.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.